Welcome to Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Emily of New Moon. Beloved for her iconic role as Miss Stacy in the classic television series Anne of Green Gables, celebrated Canadian actress Marilyn Lightstone now returns to the world of Lucy Maud Montgomery and the magic of Prince Edward Island to bring to life the unforgettable coming-of-age story of the imaginative young heroine Emily Starr. If this is your first time joining us, you can find all episodes of Marilyn Lightstone Reads at classicalfm.ca or on your favorite podcast app. And now, let's turn to Marilyn as she reads Emily of New Moon.
Chapter 3. A Hop Out of Kin. Douglas Starr lived 2 weeks more. In after years, when the pain had gone out of their recollection, Emily thought they were the most precious of her memories. They were beautiful weeks, beautiful, and not sad. And one night, when he was lying on the couch in the sitting room, with Emily beside him in the old wing chair, he went past the curtain. Went so quietly and easily that Emily did not know he was gone until she suddenly felt the strange stillness of the room. There was no breathing in it but her own. "Father! Father!" she cried. Then she screamed for Ellen. Ellen Green told the Murrays when they came that Ellen had behaved real well when you took everything into account. To be sure, she had cried all night and hadn't slept a wink. None of the Maywood people who came flocking kindly in to help could comfort her. But when morning came, her tears were all shed. She was pale and quiet and docile.
"That's right now," said Ellen. "That's what comes of being properly prepared. Your pa was so mad at me for warning you that he wasn't rightly civil to me since, and him a dying man. But I don't hold any grudge against him. I did my duty. Mrs. Hubbard's fixing up a black dress for you, and it'll be ready by supper time. Your ma's people will be here tonight, so they've telegraphed, and I'm bound they'll find you looking respectable. They're well off, and they'll provide for you. Your pa hasn't left a cent, but there ain't any debts, I'll say that for him. Have you been in to see the body?"
"Don't call him that," cried Emily, wincing.
It was horrible to hear Father called that.
"Why not? If you ain't the queerest child. He makes a better-looking corpse than I thought he would, what with being so wasted and all. He was always a pretty man, though too thin."
"Ellen Green," said Emily suddenly, "if you say any more of those things about Father, I will put the black curse on you."
Ellen Green stared.
"I don't know what on earth you mean, but that's no way to talk to me after all I've done for you. You'd better not let the Murrays hear you talking like that, or they won't want much to do with you. The black curse, indeed. Well, here's gratitude."
Emily's eyes smarted. She was just a lonely, solitary little creature, and she felt very friendless. But she was not at all remorseful for what she had said to Ellen, and she was not going to pretend she was.
"Come you here and help me wash these dishes," ordered Ellen. "It'll do you good to have something to take up your mind, and then you won't be after putting curses on people who've worked their fingers to the bone for you."
Emily, with an eloquent glance at Ellen's hands, went and got the dish towel.
"Your hands are fat and pudgy," he said. "The bones don't show at all."
"Never mind sassing back. It's awful with your poor pa dead in there. But if your Aunt Ruth takes you, she'll soon cure you of that."
"Is Aunt Ruth going to take me?"
"I don't know, but she ought to. She's a widow with no chick or child and well-to-do."
"I don't think I want Aunt Ruth to take me," said Emily deliberately, after a moment's reflection.
"Well, you won't have the choosing, likely. You ought to be thankful to get a home anywhere. Remember, you're not of much importance."
"I am important to myself," cried Emily proudly.
"It'll be some chore to bring you up," muttered Helen. "Your Aunt Ruth is the one to do it, in my opinion. She won't stand no nonsense. A fine woman she is, and the neatest housekeeper on P.E. Island. You could eat off her floor."
"I don't want to eat off her floor." I don't care if the floor is dirty as long as the tablecloth is clean.
Well, her tablecloths are clean, too, I reckon. She's got an elegant house in Shrewsbury with bow windows and wooden lace all round the roof. Very stylish. It would be a fine home for you. She'll learn you some sense and do you a world of good.
I don't want to learn sense and be done a world of good, too, cried Emily with a quivering lip. I want somebody to love me.
Well, you've got to behave yourself if you want people to like you. You're not to blame so much. Your pa spoiled you. I told him so often enough, but he just laughed. I hope he ain't sorry for it now. The fact is, Emily Starr, you're queer, and folks don't care for queer children.
How am I queer? Demanded Emily.
You talk queer, and you act queer, and at times you look queer, and you're too old for your age. Though that ain't your fault. It comes of never mixing with other children. I've always threeped at your father to send you to school. Learning at home ain't the same thing. But he wouldn't listen to me, of course. I don't say but what you are as far along in book learning as you need to be. But what you want to learn is how to be like other children. In one way, it would be a good thing if your Uncle Oliver would take you, for he's got a big family. But he's not as well off as the rest, so it ain't likely he will. Your Uncle Wallace might, seeing as he reckons himself the head of the family. He's only got a grown-up daughter. But, his wife's delicate, or fancy she is.
I wish Aunt Laura would take me, said Emily. She remembered that Father had said Aunt Laura was something like her mother.
Aunt Laura? She won't have no say in it. Elizabeth's boss a new moon. Jimmy Murray runs the farm, but he ain't quite all there, I'm told.
What part of him isn't there?
Asked Emily, curiously.
Oh, laws, it's something about his mind, child. He's a bit simple. Some accident or other when he was a youngster, I've heard. It addled his head, kind of. Elizabeth was mixed up in it in some way. I've never heard the rights of it. I don't reckon the New Moon people will want to be bothered with you. They're awful set in their ways. You take my advice and try to please your Aunt Ruth. Be polite and well-behaved. Maybe she'll take a fancy to you. There, that's all the dishes. You'd better go upstairs and be out of the way.
Can I take Mike and Saucy Sal?
Asked Emily.
No, you can't.
They'd be company for me,
pleaded Emily.
Company or no company, you can't have them. They're outside, and they'll stay outside. I ain't going to have them tracking all over the house. The floor's been scrubbed.
Why didn't you scrub the floor when Father was alive?
Asked Emily.
He liked things to be clean. You hardly ever scrubbed it then. Why do you do it now?
Listen to her. Was I to be always scrubbing floors with my rheumatiz? Get off upstairs, and you'd better lie down a while.
I'm going upstairs. But I'm not going to lie down, said Emily. I've got a lot of thinking to do.
There's one thing I'd advise you to do, said Ellen, determined to lose no chance of doing her duty, and that is to kneel down and pray to God to make you a good and respectful and grateful child.
Emily paused at the foot of the stairs and looked back.
Father said I wasn't to have anything to do with your God, she said gravely.
Ellen gasped foolishly, but could not think of any reply to this heathenish statement. She appealed to the universe.
Did anyone ever hear the like?
I know what your God is like, said Emily. I saw his picture in that Adam and Eve book of yours. He has whiskers and wears a nightgown. I don't like him, but I like Father's God.
And what is your Father's God like, if I may ask?
Demanded Ellen sarcastically. Emily hadn't any idea what Father's God was like, but she was determined not to be posed by Ellen.
He is as clear as the moon, fair as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners, she said triumphantly.
Well, you're bound to have the last word, but the Murrays will teach you what's what, said Ellen, giving up the argument. They're strict Presbyterians and won't hold by any of your father's awful notions. Get off upstairs.
Emily went up to the south room,
feeling very desolate. "There isn't anybody in the world who loves me now," she said, as she curled up on her bed by the window. But she was determined she would not cry. The Murrays, who had hated her father, should not see her crying. She felt that she detested them all, except perhaps Aunt Laura. How very big and empty the world had suddenly become. Nothing was interesting anymore. It did not matter that the little squat apple tree between Adam and Eve had become a thing of rose and snow beauty. That the hills beyond the hollow were of green silk, purple misted, that the daffodils were out in the garden, that the birches were hung all over with golden tassels, that the wind woman was blowing up white young clouds across the sky. None of these things had any charm or consolation for her now. In her inexperience, she believed they never would have again. "But I promise, Father, I'd be brave," she whispered, clenching her little fists. "And I will. And I won't let the Murray see I'm afraid of him. I won't be afraid of them." When the far-off whistle of the afternoon train blew beyond the hills, Emily's heart began to beat. She clasped her hands and lifted her face. "Please help me, Father's God, not Ellen's God," he said. "Help me to be brave and not cry before the Murrays." Soon after, there was the sound of wheels below and voices, loud, decided voices. Then Ellen came puffing up the stairs with the black dress, a sleazy thing of cheap merino. "Mrs. Hubbard, just got it done in time, thanks be. I wouldn't add the Murrays see you not in black for the world. They can't say I haven't done my duty. Well, they're all here, the New Moon people and Oliver and his wife, your Aunt Addie and Wallace and his wife, your Aunt Eva and Aunt Ruth, Mrs. Dutton, her name is. There, you're ready now. Come along."
"Can't I put my Venetian beads on?" asked Emily.
"Did ever any mortal? Venetian beads with a mourning dress. Shame on you. Is this a time to be thinking of vanity?"
"It isn't vanity," cried Emily. "Father gave me those beads last Christmas, and I want to show the Murrays that I've got something."
"No more of your nonsense. Come along, I say. Mind your manners. There's a good deal depends on the impression you make on them."
Emily walked rigidly downstairs before Ellen and into the parlor. 8 people were sitting around it, and she instantly felt the critical gaze of 16 stranger eyes. She looked very pale and plain in her black dress. The purple shadows left by weeping made her large eyes look too large and hollow. She was desperately afraid, and she knew it, but she would not let the Murrays see it. She held up her head and faced the ordeal before her gallantly.
"This," said Ellen, turning her around by the shoulder, "is your Uncle Wallace."
Emily shuddered and put out a cold hand. She did not like Uncle Wallace. She knew that at once. He was black and grim and ugly, with frowning, bristly brows and a stern, unpitying mouth. He had big pouches under his eyes and carefully trimmed black side whiskers. Emily decided then and there that she did not admire side whiskers.
"How do you do, Emily?"
he said coldly, and just as coldly he bent forward and kissed her cheek. A sudden wave of indignation swept over Emily's soul. How dared he kiss her? He had hated her father and disowned her mother. She would have none of his kisses. Flash quick, she snatched her handkerchief from her pocket and wiped her outraged cheek.
"Well, well!"
exclaimed a disagreeable voice from the other side of the room. Uncle Wallace looked as if he would like to say a great many things, but couldn't think of them. Ellen, with a grunt of despair, propelled Emily to the next sitter. "Your Aunt Eva," she said. Aunt Eva was sitting huddled up in a shawl. She had the fretful face of the imaginary invalid. She shook hands with Emily and said nothing. Neither did Emily.
"Your Uncle Oliver," announced Ellen.
Emily rather liked Uncle Oliver's appearance. He was big and fat and rosy and jolly-looking. She thought she would not mind so much if he kissed her,
in spite of his bristly white moustache. But Uncle Oliver had learned Uncle Wallace's lesson. "I'll give you a quarter for a kiss," he whispered genially. A joke was Uncle Oliver's idea of being kind and sympathetic, but Emily did not know this and resented it.
"I don't sell my kisses," she said, lifting her head as haughtily as any Murray of them all could do.
Uncle Oliver chuckled and seemed infinitely amused and not a bit offended, but Emily heard a sniff across the room. Aunt Addie was next. She was as fat and rosy and jolly-looking as her husband, and she gave Emily's cold hand a nice, gentle squeeze.
"How are you, dear?" she said.
That "dear" touched Emily and thawed her a trifle, but the next in turn froze her up instantly again. It was Aunt Ruth. Emily knew it was Aunt Ruth before Ellen said so, and she knew it was Aunt Ruth who had well-welled and sniffed. She knew the cold gray eyes, the prim, dull brown hair, the short, stout figure, the thin, pinched, merciless mouth. Aunt Ruth held out the tips of her fingers, but Emily did not take them.
"Shake hands with your aunt," said Ellen in an angry whisper. "She does not want to shake hands with me," said Emily distinctly, "and so I am not going to do it."
Aunt Ruth folded her scorned hands back on her black silk lap.
"You are a very ill-bred child," she said, "but of course it was only what was to be expected."
Emily felt a sudden compunction. Had she cast a reflection on her father by her behavior? Perhaps, after all, she should have shaken hands with Aunt Ruth. But it was too late now. Ellen had already jerked her on.
"This is your cousin, Mr. James Murray," said Ellen,
in the disgusted tone of one who gives up something as a bad job and is only anxious to be done with it.
Cousin Jimmy,
said that individual. Emily looked steadily at him and liked him at once, without any reservations. He had a little rosy, elfish face with a forked gray beard. His hair curled over his head in a most un-Murray-like mop of glossy brown, and his large brown eyes were as kind and frank as a child's. He gave Emily a hearty handshake, though he looked askance at the lady across from him while doing it.
"Hello, pussy," he said.
Emily began to smile at him, but her smile was, as always, so slow in developing that Ellen had whisked her on before it was in full flower, and it was Aunt Laura who got the benefit of it. Aunt Laura started and paled.
"Juliet, smile," she said,
half under her breath. And again Aunt Ruth sniffed. Aunt Laura did not look like anyone else in the room. She was almost pretty, with her delicate features and the heavy coils of pale, sleek, fair hair, faintly grayed, pinned closely all round her head. But it was her eyes that won Emily. They were such round, blue, blue eyes. One never quite got over the shock of their blueness. And when she spoke, it was in a beautiful, soft voice.
"You poor, dear little child," she said, and put her arm around Emily for a gentle hug.
Emily returned the hug and had a narrow escape then from letting the Murray see her cry. All that saved her was the fact that Ellen suddenly pushed her on into the corner by the window.
"This is your Aunt Elizabeth."
Yes, this was Aunt Elizabeth, no doubt about that. And she had on a stiff black satin dress, so stiff and rich that Emily felt sure it must be her very best. This pleased Emily. Whatever Aunt Elizabeth thought of her father, at least she had paid him the respect of her best dress. And Aunt Elizabeth was quite fine-looking in a tall, thin, austere style, with clear-cut features and a massive coronet of iron-gray hair under her black lace cap. But her eyes, though steel-blue, were as cold as Aunt Ruth's, and her long, thin mouth was compressed severely. Under her cool, appraising glance, Emily retreated into herself and shut the door of her soul. She would have liked to please Aunt Elizabeth, who was boss a new moon, but she felt she could not do it. Aunt Elizabeth shook hands and said nothing, the truth being that she did not know exactly what to say. Elizabeth Murray would not have felt put about before king or governor general. The Murray pride would have carried her through there. But she did feel disturbed in the presence of this alien, level-gazing child who had already shown that she was anything but meek and humble. Though Elizabeth Murray would never have admitted it, she did not want to be snubbed as Wallace and Ruth had been. "Go and sit on the sofa," ordered Ellen. Emily sat on the sofa with her eyes cast down, a slight, black, indomitable little figure. She folded her hands on her lap and crossed her ankles. They should see she had manners. Ellen had retreated to the kitchen, thanking her stars that that was over. Emily did not like Ellen, but she felt deserted when Ellen had gone. She was alone now before the bar of Murray opinion. She would have given anything to be out of the room. Yet in the back of her mind, a design was forming of writing all about it in the old account book. It would be interesting. She could describe them all. She knew she could. She had the very word for Aunt Ruth's eyes. Stone gray. They were just like stones, as hard and cold and relentless. Then a pang tore through her heart. Father could never again read what she wrote in the account book. Still, she felt that she would rather like to write it all out. How could she best describe Aunt Laura's eyes? They were such beautiful eyes. Just to call them blue meant nothing. Hundreds of people had blue eyes. Oh, she had it. Wells of blue. That was the very thing. And then the flash came. It was the first time since the dreadful night when Ellen had met her on the doorstep. She had thought it could never come again, and now, in this most unlikely place and time, it had come. She had seen, with other eyes than those of sense, the wonderful world behind the veil. Courage and hope flooded her cold little soul like a wave of rosy light. She lifted her head and looked about her undauntedly, brazenly, Aunt Ruth afterwards declared. Yes, she would write them all out in the account book. Describe every last one of them. Sweet Aunt Laura, nice cousin Jimmy, grim old Uncle Wallace, and moon-faced Uncle Oliver, stately Aunt Elizabeth, and detestable Aunt Ruth.
She's a delicate-looking child, said Aunt Eva suddenly, in her fretful, colourless voice.
Well, what else could you expect? Said Aunt Addy, with a sigh that seemed to Emily to hold some dire significance. She's too pale. If she had a little colour, she wouldn't be bad-looking.
I don't know who she looks like, said Uncle Oliver, staring at Emily.
She is not a Murray. That is plain to be seen, said Aunt Elizabeth, decidedly and disapprovingly.
They are talking about me just as if I wasn't here, thought Emily, her heart swelling with indignation over the indecency of it.
I wouldn't call her a star either, said Uncle Oliver. Seems to me she's more like the birds. She's got her grandmother's hair and eyes.
She's got old George Bird's nose, said Aunt Ruth, in a tone that left no doubt as to her opinion of George's nose.
She's got her father's forehead, said Aunt Eva,
also disapprovingly.
She has her mother's smile, said Aunt Laura, but in such a low tone that nobody heard her.
Aunt Juliet's long lashes. Hadn't Juliet very long lashes? Said Aunt Addie.
Emily had reached the limit of her endurance.
You make me feel as if I was made up of scraps and patches,
she burst out indignantly. The Murrays stared at her. Perhaps they felt some compunction, for after all, none of them were ogres and all were human, more or less. Apparently, nobody could think of anything to say. But the shocked silence was broken by a chuckle from Cousin Jimmy, a low chuckle, full of mirth and free from malice.
That's right, Puss, he said. Stand up to them. Take your own part.
Jimmy,
said Aunt Ruth.
Jimmy subsided.
Aunt Ruth looked at Emily.
When I was a little girl, she said,
I never spoke until I was spoken to.
But if nobody ever spoke until they were spoken to, there would be no conversation, said Emily,
argumentatively.
I never answered back, Aunt Ruth went on severely. In those days, little girls were trained properly. We were polite and respectful to our elders. We were taught our place, and we kept it.
I don't believe you ever had much fun, said Emily,
and then gasped in horror. She hadn't meant to say that out loud. She had only meant to think it. But she had such an old habit of thinking aloud to Father.
Fun, said Aunt Ruth in a shocked tone. I did not think of fun when I was a little girl.
No, I know,
said Emily gravely. Her voice and manner were perfectly respectful, for she was anxious to atone for her involuntary lapse. Yet Aunt Ruth looked as if she would like to box her ears. This child was pitying her, insulting her by being sorry for her because of her prim, impeccable childhood. It was unendurable, especially in a star. And that abominable Jimmy was chuckling again. Elizabeth should suppress him.
Fortunately, Ellen Green appeared at this juncture and announced supper.
You've got to wait, she whispered to Emily. There ain't room for you at the table. Emily was glad. She knew she could not eat a bite under the Murray eyes. Her aunts and uncles filed out stiffly without looking at her, all except Aunt Laura, who turned at the door and blew her a tiny furtive kiss. Before Emily could respond, Ellen Green had shut the door. Emily was left all alone in the room that was filling with twilight shadows. The pride that had sustained her in the presence of the Murrays suddenly failed her, and she knew that tears were coming. She went straight to the closed door at the end of the parlor, opened it, and went in. Her father's coffin stood in the center of the small room, which had been a bedroom. It was heaped with flowers. The Murrays had done the proper thing in that, as in all else. The great anchor of white roses Uncle Wallace had brought stood up aggressively on the small table at the head. Emily could not see her father's face for Aunt Ruth's heavily fragrant pillow of white hyacinths lying on the glass, and she dared not move it. But she curled herself up on the floor and laid her cheek against the polished side of the casket. They found her there asleep when they came in after supper. Aunt Laura lifted her up and said, I'm going to take the poor child up to bed. She is worn right out. Emily opened her eyes and looked drowsily about her.
Can I have Mike? She said. Who is Mike? My cat. My big grey cat.
A cat! Exclaimed Aunt Elizabeth in a shocked tone. You must not have a cat in your bedroom.
Why not, for once? Pleaded Laura.
Certainly not, said Aunt Elizabeth. A cat is the most unwholesome thing in a sleeping apartment. I'm surprised at you, Laura. Take the child up to bed and see that there are plenty of bedclothes. It's a cold night, but let me hear no more talk of sleeping with cats.
Mike is a clean cat, said Emily. He washes himself every day.
Take her up to bed, Laura, said Aunt Elizabeth, ignoring Emily.
Aunt Laura yielded meekly. She carried Emily upstairs, helping her undress, and tucked her into bed. Emily was very sleepy. But before she was wholly asleep, she felt something soft and warm and purry and companionable snuggling down by her shoulder. Aunt Laura had sneaked down, found Mike, and brought him up to her. Aunt Elizabeth never knew, and Ellen Green dared not say a word in protest. For was not Laura a Murray of New Moon?
Chapter 4 A Family Conclave.
Emily awakened at daylight the next morning. Through her low, uncurtained window, the splendor of the sunrise was coming in, and one faint white star was still lingering in the crystal green sky over the rooster pine. A fresh, sweet wind of dawn was blowing around the eaves. Ellen Green was sleeping in the big bed and snoring soundly. Except for that, the little house was very still. It was the chance for which Emily had waited.
Very carefully, she slipped from her bed, tiptoed across the room, and opened the door. Mike uncoiled himself from the mat on the middle of the floor and followed her, rubbing his warm sides against her chilly little ankles. Almost guiltily, she crept down the bare, dark staircase. How the steps creaked! Surely it would waken everybody. But nobody appeared, and Emily got down and slipped into the parlor, drawing a long breath of relief as she closed the door. She almost ran across the room to the other door. Aunt Ruth's floral pillow still covered the glass of the casket. Emily, with a tightening of the lips that gave her face an odd resemblance to Aunt Elizabeth, lifted up the pillow and set it on the floor.
"Oh, Father, Father," she whispered, putting her hand to her throat to keep something down. She stood there, a little shivering, white-clad figure, and looked at her father. This was to be her goodbye. She must say it when they were alone together. She would not say it before the Murrays.
Father looked so beautiful. All the lines of pain had vanished. His face looked almost like a boy's, except for the silver hair above it. And he was smiling. Such a nice, whimsical, wise little smile, as if he had suddenly discovered something lovely and unexpected and surprising. She had seen many nice smiles on his face in life, but never one just like this.
"Father, I didn't cry before them," she whispered. "I'm sure I didn't disgrace the stars. Not shaking hands with Aunt Ruth wasn't disgracing the stars, was it? Because she didn't really want me to. Oh, Father, I don't think any of them like me. Unless perhaps Aunt Laura does a little. And I'm going to cry a little bit now, Father, because I can't keep it back all the time."
She laid her face on the cold glass and sobbed bitterly, but briefly. She must say goodbye before anyone found her. Raising her head, she looked long and earnestly at the beloved face.
"Goodbye, dearest darling," she whispered chokingly.
Dashing away her blinding tears, she replaced Aunt Ruth's pillow, hiding her father's face from her forever. Then she slipped out, intent on speedily regaining her room. At the door, she almost fell over Cousin Jimmy, who was sitting on a chair before it, swathed in a huge check dressing gown and nursing Mike.
"Shh," he whispered, patting her on the shoulder. "I heard you coming down and followed you. I knew what you wanted. I've been sitting here to keep them out if any of them came after you. Here, take this and hurry back to your bed, small pussy."
This was a roll of peppermint lozenges. Emily clutched it and fled, overcome with shame at being seen by Cousin Jimmy in her nightgown. She hated peppermints and never ate them, but the fact of Cousin Jimmy Murray's kindness in giving them to her sent a thrill of delight to her heart. And he called her Small Pussy, too. She liked that. She had thought nobody would ever call her nice pet names again. Father had had so many of them for her. Sweetheart and Darling and Emily Child, and Dear Wee Kidlet, and Honey, and Elfkin. He had a pet name for every mood, and she had loved them all. As for Cousin Jimmy, he was nice. Whatever part of him was missing, it wasn't his heart. She felt so grateful to him that after she was safely in her bed again, she forced herself to eat one of the lozenges, though it took all her grit to worry it down. The funeral was held that forenoon. For once, the lonesome little house in the hollow was filled. The coffin was taken into the parlor, and the Murrays, as mourners, sat stiffly and decorously all round it. Emily was among them, pale and prim in her black dress. She sat between Aunt Elizabeth and Uncle Wallace and dared not move a muscle. No other star was present. Her father had no near living relatives. The Maywood people came and looked at his dead face with a freedom and insolent curiosity they would never have presumed on in life. Emily hated to have them looking at her father like that.
They had no right. They hadn't been friendly to him when he was alive. They had said harsh things of him. Emily Green had sometimes repeated them. Every glance that fell on him hurt Emily. But she sat still and gave no outward sign. Aunt Ruth said afterwards that she had never seen a child so absolutely devoid of all natural feeling. When the service was over, the Murrays rose and marched around the coffin for a dutiful look of farewell. Aunt Elizabeth took Emily's hand and tried to draw her along with them, but Emily pulled it back and shook her head. She had said her goodbye already. Aunt Elizabeth seemed for a moment to be on the point of insisting. Then she grimly swept onward, alone, looking every inch a Murray. No scene must be made at a funeral. Douglas Starr was to be taken to Charlottetown for burial besides his wife. The Murrays were all going, but Emily was not to go. She watched the funeral procession as it wound up the long grassy hill through the light gray rain that was beginning to fall. Emily was glad it was raining. Many a time she had heard Ellen Green say that happy was the corpse the rain fell on, and it was easier to see Father go away in that soft, kind gray mist than through sparkling, laughing sunshine. "Well, I must say the funeral went off fine," said Ellen Green at her shoulder. "Everything's been done regardless. If your father was looking down from heaven at it, Emily, I'm sure he'd be pleased." "He isn't in heaven," said Emily. "Good gracious, of all the children!" Ellen could say no more. "He isn't there yet. He's only on the way. He said he'd wait around and go slow until I died too, so that I could catch up with him. I hope I'll die soon." "That's a wicked, wicked thing to wish," rebuked Ellen. When the last buggy had disappeared, Emily went back to the sitting room, got a book out of the bookcase, and buried herself in the wing chair. The women who were tidying up were glad she was quiet and out of the way. "It's well she can read," said Mrs. Hubbard gloomily. "Some little girls couldn't be so composed. Jenny Hood just screamed and shrieked after they carried her mother out. The Hoods are all such feeling people." Emily was not reading. She was thinking. She knew the Murrays would be back in the afternoon, and she knew her fate would probably be settled then. "We'll talk the matter over when we come back," she had heard Uncle Wallace saying that morning after breakfast. Some instinct told her just what the matter was, and she would have given one of her pointed ears to hear the discussion with the other. But she knew very well she would be sent out of the way. So she was not surprised when Ellen came to her in the twilight and said, "You'd better go upstairs, Emily. Your aunts and uncles are coming in here to talk over the business."
"Can't I help you get supper?"
asked Emily, who thought that if she were going and coming around the kitchen, she might catch a word or two.
"No, you'd be more bother than help. March now."
Ellen waddled out to the kitchen without waiting to see if Emily marched. Emily got up reluctantly. How could she sleep tonight if she did not know what was going to happen to her? And she felt quite sure she would not be told till morning, if then. Her eyes fell on the oblong table in the center of the room. Its cloth was of generous proportions, falling in heavy folds to the floor. There was a flash of black stockings across the rug, a sudden disturbance of drapery, and then silence. Emily, on the floor under the table, arranged her legs comfortably and sat triumphant. She would hear what was decided, and nobody would be any the wiser. She had never been told that it was not considered strictly honorable to eavesdrop, no occasion for such instruction ever having arisen in her life with her father, and she considered that it was a bit of pure luck that she had thought of hiding under the table. She could even see dimly through the cloth. Her heart beat so loudly in her excitement that she was afraid they would hear it. There was no other sound save the soft, faraway singing of frogs through the rain that sounded through the open window. In they came. Down they sat around the room. Emily held her breath. For a few minutes nobody spoke, though Aunt Eva sighed long and heavily. Then Uncle Wallace cleared his throat and said,
Well, what is to be done with the child?
Nobody was in a hurry to answer. Emily thought they would never speak. Finally, Aunt Eva said with a whine,
She's such a difficult child, so odd. I can't understand her at all.
I think, said Aunt Laura timidly, that she has what one might call an artistic temperament.
She's a spoiled child, said Aunt Ruth very decidedly.
There's work ahead to straighten out her manners, if you ask me.
The little listener under the table turned her head and shot a scornful glance at Aunt Ruth through the tablecloth.
I think that your own manners have a slight curve.
Emily did not dare even to murmur the words under her breath, but she shaped them with her mouth. This was a great relief and satisfaction.
I agree with you, said Aunt Eva, and I, for one, do not feel equal to the task.
Emily understood that this meant Uncle Wallace didn't mean to take her, and she rejoiced thereat.
The truth is, said Uncle Wallace, Aunt Nancy ought to take her. She has more of this world's goods than any of us.
Aunt Nancy would never dream of taking her, and you know it well enough,
said Uncle Oliver.
Besides, she's entirely too old to have the bringing up of a child. Her and that old witch Caroline. Upon my soul, I don't believe either of them is human. I would like to take Emily, but I feel that I can hardly do it. I've a large family to provide for.
She'll not likely live long to bother anyone, said Aunt Elizabeth crisply. She'll probably die of consumption, same as her father did.
I won't,
exclaimed Emily. At least she thought it with such a vim that it almost seemed that she exclaimed it. She forgot that she had wanted to die soon, so that she could overtake father. She wanted to live now, just to put the Murrays in the wrong.
I haven't any intention of dying. I'm going to live for ages and be a famous authoress. You'll just see if I don't, Aunt Elizabeth Murray.
She is a weedy-looking child, acknowledged Uncle Wallace.
Emily relieved her outraged feelings by making a face at Uncle Wallace through the tablecloth.
If ever I possess a pig, I am going to name it after you, she thought,
and then felt quite satisfied with her revenge.
Somebody has to look after her as long as she's alive, though, you know, said Uncle Oliver.
It would serve you all right if I did die, and you suffered terrible remorse for it all the rest of your lives, Emily thought.
Then, in the pause that happened to follow, she dramatically pictured out her funeral, selected her pallbearers, and tried to choose the hymn verse that she wanted engraved on her tombstone. But before she could settle this, Uncle Wallace began again.
Well, we are not getting anywhere. We have to look after the child.
I wish you wouldn't call me the child, thought Emily bitterly.
And some of us must give her a home. Julian's daughter must not be left to the mercy of strangers. Personally, I feel that Eva's health is not equal to the care and training of a child.
Of such a child, said Aunt Eva.
Emily stuck her tongue out at Aunt Eva.
Poor little soul, said Aunt Laura gently.
Something frozen in Emily's heart melted at that moment. She was pitifully pleased over being called poor little soul so tenderly.
I do not think you need pity her overmuch, Laura, said Uncle Wallace decidedly.
It is evident that she has very little feeling. I have not seen her shed a tear since we came here.
Did you notice that she would not even take a last look at her father? Said Aunt Elizabeth.
Cousin Jimmy suddenly whistled at the ceiling.
She feels so much that she has to hide it, said Aunt Laura.
Uncle Wallace snorted.
Don't you think we might take her, Elizabeth?
Laura went on timidly. Aunt Elizabeth stirred restlessly.
I don't suppose she'd be contented at New Moon with three old people like us.
I would,
thought Emily.
Ruth, what about you? Said Uncle Wallace. You're all alone in that big house. It would be a good thing for you to have some company.
I don't like her, said Aunt Ruth sharply. She is as sly as a snake.
I'm not, thought Emily.
With wise and careful training, many of her faults may be cured, said Uncle Wallace pompously.
I don't want them cured.
Emily was getting angrier and angrier all the time under the table.
I like my faults better than I do your...
She fumbled mentally for a word, then triumphantly recalled a phrase of her father's.
Your abominable virtues.
I doubt it, said Aunt Ruth in a biting tone. What's bred in the bone comes out in the flesh. As for Douglas Starr, I think that it was perfectly disgraceful for him to die and leave that child without a cent.
Did he do it on purpose? Asked Cousin Jimmy, blandly. It was the first time he had spoken.
He was a miserable failure, snapped Aunt Ruth.
He wasn't! He wasn't! Screamed Emily, suddenly sticking her head out under the tablecloth between the end legs of the table.
For a moment, the Murrays sat as silent and motionless as if her outburst had turned them to stone. Then Aunt Ruth rose, stalked to the table, and lifted the cloth, behind which Emily had retired in dismay, realizing what she had done.
"Get up and come out of that, Emily Starr," said Aunt Ruth.
Emily Starr got up and came out. She was not too specially frightened. She was too angry to be that. Her eyes had gone black and her cheeks crimson.
"What a little beauty! What a regular little beauty!" said Cousin Jimmy.
But nobody heard him. Aunt Ruth had the floor.
"You shameless little eavesdropper," she said. "There's the Starr blood coming out, and Murray would never have done such a thing. You ought to be whipped." "Father wasn't a failure," cried Emily, choking with anger. "Who had no right to call him a failure? Nobody who was loved as much as he was could ever be a failure. I don't believe anybody ever loved you. So it's you that's a failure, and I'm not going to die of consumption."
"Do you realize what a shameful thing you've been guilty of?" demanded Aunt Ruth, cold with anger.
"I want you to hear what was going to become of me," cried Emily. "I didn't know it was such a dreadful thing to do. I didn't know you were going to say such horrid things about me."
"Listeners never hear any good of themselves," said Aunt Elizabeth impressively. "Your mother would never have done that, Emily."
The bravado all went out of poor Emily. She felt guilty and miserable, oh, so miserable. She hadn't known, but it seemed she had committed a terrible sin.
"Go upstairs," said Aunt Ruth.
Emily went, without a protest, but before going, she looked around the room.
"While I was under the table," she said, "I made a face at Uncle Wallace and stuck my tongue out at Aunt Eva."
She said it sorrowfully, desiring to make a clean breast of her transgressions, but so easily do we misunderstand each other that the Murrays actually thought that she was indulging in a piece of gratuitous impertinence. When the door had closed behind her, they all, except Aunt Laura and Cousin Jimmy, shook their heads and groaned. Emily went upstairs in a state of bitter humiliation. She felt that she had done something that gave the Murrays the right to despise her, and they thought it was the Starr coming out in her, and she had not even found out what her fate was to be. She looked dismally at little Emily in the glass.
"I didn't know. I didn't know," she whispered. "But I'll know after this," he added with sudden vim, "and I'll never, never do it again."
For a moment she thought she would throw herself on her bed and cry. She couldn't bear all the pain and shame that were burning in her heart. Then her eyes fell on the old yellow account book on her little table. A minute later, Emily was curled up on her bed, Turk fashion, writing eagerly in the old book with her little stubby lead pencil. As her fingers flew over the faded lines, her cheeks flushed and her eyes shone. She forgot the Murrays, although she was writing about them. She forgot her humiliation, although she was describing what had happened. For an hour she wrote steadily by the wretched light of her smoky little lamp, never pausing, save now and then, to gaze out of the window into the dim beauty of this misty night, while she hunted through her consciousness for a certain word she wanted. When she found it, she gave a happy sigh and fell to again. When she heard the Murrays coming upstairs, she put her book away. She had finished. She had written a description of the whole occurrence and of that conclave ring of Murrays, and she had wound up by a pathetic description of her own deathbed, with the Murrays standing around imploring her forgiveness. At first she depicted Aunt Ruth as doing it on her knees in an agony of remorseful sobs. Then she suspended her pencil. Aunt Ruth couldn't ever feel as bad as that over anything, she thought, and drew her pencil through the line. In the writing, pain and humiliation had passed away. She only felt tired and rather happy. It had been fun, finding words to fit Uncle Wallace, and what exquisite satisfaction it had been to describe Aunt Ruth as a dumpy little woman. I wonder what my uncles and aunts would say if they knew what I really think of them, she murmured, as she got into bed.
Thank you for listening to Marilyn Lightstone Reads, part of the Zoomer Podcast Network. This episode was produced by Duncan Briggs, executive producer Moses Neimer. Discover more of Marilyn's readings, including Pride and Prejudice, Sense and Sensibility, Vanity Fair, Jane Eyre, and Anne of Green Gables at classicalfm.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also support this series by recommending it to your friends and leaving a 5-star review. Marilyn Lightstone Reads, beautiful stories, beautifully read for a crazy world.